Welcome to The Cutting Edge, a podcast series powered by Edge Growth, expert solutionist in enterprise and supply development, SME development, and impact investing in South Africa.
Hi, my name is Pilani Mzila, and I am a senior dealmaker at Edge Growth, looking after the Vumela Fund. I'm joined today by Mike Sage and Morendeni Mafumo. And we're here to discuss SME funding, the challenges and the opportunities in the space. Mike, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much. My name is Mike Sage. I currently kind of in this context have two roles. So I'm an executive at FNB, focusing on, lending and raising funding. So our clients in that context can kind of come to the bank and get anything from equity all the way down to working capital funding. And in that, also in today's kind of conversation, we, some time back, about 10 years ago, decided to put some capital into Vumela Trust to help facilitate, funding into SMEs that we weren't able to participate in through, you know, the banks have some quite strict regulations as to what we can or cannot participate in terms of frameworks and risk frameworks and prudential authority. And so we put some money into the trust to try and facilitate that. And I guess today is a discussion as to, you know, kind of how some of that's gone and where we find ourselves 10 years later in that trajectory and how we've managed to find some really good businesses to put debt and equity into over time. And I guess, and our learnings around this demand for funding from SMEs and how we've managed to try and find ways to, non-traditional ways to provide that funding, because, you know, in any country or any economy around the world, if you're starting a business, it's incredibly difficult to raise capital to get going. And so most individuals, when they start businesses, they kind of turn to some form of, in developed countries specifically, generational wealth to kind of help them, family and friends and various others, to give them the capital to start their ideas. And in this country, we don't have that. So we really need to try and find ways to assist with the development of SMEs to find funding mechanisms and help get access to capital to create that momentum and get SMEs off the ground, and because they're so important for creating jobs and various other things. But I suppose we're here to kind of give you some feedback on to how some of that's going.
Excellent. Morendeni?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. My name is Morendeni Mafumo. I am originally from Venda, from Shandi, in Limpopo. I, by qualification, I'm a scientist, but at the moment, I run an organization called Kusini Water, one of the portfolio companies at Vumela. In my previous life, I used to work in public sector. So I used to work for City of Cape Town as well as Johannesburg Water as a water scientist. One of my biggest passions has always been, since I started working in the water space, was how do we ensure that everyone, regardless of location, has access to safe drinking water. When I still worked in the city, part of our job was to travel around to ensure that we can assist the city to increase our water infrastructure. So what I always struggled with was from where I come from in Limpopo to Khayelitsha in Cape Town. Just the gap that exists in the high-income communities and the low-income communities when it comes to access to clean drinking water. It's always been a struggle of mine to see how that's not accelerated with development. So my passion and my expertise and my time lies on ensuring that we can solve this problem in our lifetime. So Kusini Water exists to do that. And I think the backing that we receive allows us to accelerate that.
No, excellent. And just a quick question for you. I mean, you've been running Kusini Water for 3-4 years now. Yeah. Maybe share with us some of the journey that you've gone through, firstly building the business over the first sort of 3 years and actually accessing funding for the business to sort of accelerate that growth. What are some of the learnings, the lessons that you've experienced and some of the challenges you've experienced as well?
Yeah. I mean, very interestingly enough, yesterday I was doing an interview with the Financial Times. I never imagined my life doing an interview with the Financial Times. That was a mind bender. But they asked me, what was your first ever source of funding? And I never really think about it, because most of the money that I'd invested in the business was from my own pension fund.
Yeah.
But what happened was that I went to, so there was a pitching competition at Gibbs for social entrepreneurships. So I went and I pitched and I got some money there. So that was my first ever bit of funding that we used to do a POC, a proof of concept, initial stages. And then we went on to the Innovation Hub. What then happened was that a lot of the initial development was then from financing we got from the Innovation Hub. So this was IP development, technology development, as well as getting the early staff members, because Innovation Hub sometimes gets technicians and engineers from TUT and other universities. So initially, we then got a little bit of money. The Department of Science and Innovation gave us 200,000 rands. Mm-hmm. At the time, was a lot of money. But then what happened was that as we, the more we progressed, the more we were hiring people, the more we were building this technology, this product that we're trying to build, yeah. The more we realized that we can't keep stop and start, because then what happens is that the funding we're getting, a lot of it would be like 200,000, 300,000. And majority of that money would then need to be used for the product development.
Yes.
So it doesn't really assist in necessarily growing the organization. So it's not necessarily growth of the organization. So first 3-4 years, we used all of that cheap capital, so which was grant funding, a lot of it, and we never used any debt funding at all, mm-hmm. At all in the initial stages. So from Innovation Hub, the Department of Science and Innovation, Gibbs, and some of the other partners, we managed to raise close to maybe 1.4 million rands in the first 2 to 3 years, which helped us to build the technology. But then the challenge with that is always that that's a stop-start kind of funding.
Yes,
it never really allows you to grow. So that's when we thought, early last year, we thought, let's actually go and raise some extra money just to allow, to help us with the growth itself. So yeah, so that's really where the journey of where we came from. Because in 2018, we launched our first product. Well, as soon as we launched, supporting the product, as well as growing the team at the same time, becomes two different things.
Yes.
So it becomes an issue of, if you get funding for the product itself, that's not necessarily funding for the
team. Organization,
yeah.
Yes.
That's not necessarily funding for the technical support, funding for fleet, funding for workshop space, which slows you down a lot.
Yes.
So that's where the sort of the journey of funding started. Yeah.
Oh, great stuff. And I mean, you've come up with quite an innovative product. I mean, can you share a bit about the technology and sort of the idea behind it and some of the, I guess, protections you had to put in place just to sort of roll out the technology on an African or global scale?
Yeah. So at the moment we have mainly 4 main patents. The patents, generally speaking, are for the process as well as the functionality of the filtration system itself. So our filtration system is a 2-stage filtration system. So dirty water comes in, goes to the first stage, which is carbon, which is made from macadamia nut shells. So we've got farmers primarily in Limpopo. We are at the moment being pulled by a few provinces, one in the Eastern Cape and one in Mpumalanga. They're trying to get us to come and process macadamia nut shells in their provinces because they're growing them. So we get the shells from Limpopo farmers at the moment. They package the shells, incinerate them, break them apart, and bring them to our warehouse in Johannesburg in 20 kilograms bags. The second component of that is nanofibers. So we've got a nanofiber manufacturing partner. So they manufacture from 75 square meter all the way to 40 inch fibers for us. Those help to remove viruses, bacteria, E. coli, and anything that could be in water bigger than 0.01 micron. Combined, we've got the combination of those two then allows us to file a functionality as well as a process patent. We've got 4 of those for the two functional parts of the filtration system. That allows us to take water from mostly surface water, groundwater, rainwater, any other water source except for seawater, mm-hmm. and turn it into drinkable water.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing. That's amazing. And really sort of innovative as a product, especially for the African landscape at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Mike, I mean, you've been through, I'd say, 3 iterations now of the Vumela Fund. What do you think, or rather, how do you think the landscape has changed over the course of those funds in terms of funding needs required by businesses and non-funding support? How do you think that's evolved?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the reality for us is that so many businesses and business concepts are looking for access to capital. And the idea is for us over that time period was to kind of assess and, you know, what works and what doesn't work in terms of success stories. In other words, providing capital to businesses that end up, being incredibly successful, which I guess is any investor's dream, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the reality for us is that in order to identify what businesses might work and where capital can be best used and put to work over time, I think for me the best success stories lie in the offering or the business model. Okay. So if you have a relatively, there's obviously huge complexities in Kuseni Water's operating model and some of the patents and the technology. But the reality is that the business model and the offering is relatively straightforward and conceptually quite easy to understand. And in that case, I really think that, you know, any business out there that was trying to raise any capital would be best served by trying to contextualize in a document exactly what their offering is, what their market kind of is, a few things like, you know, who the competitors might be, some of the price point stuff. But certainly if you have a holistic understanding of what your market is, what offering you have, comes a long way in before you even get close to kind of going out into to anybody to say, you know, would you give me some money to finance my idea? Mm. So once you've got that, in a relatively concise form, a succinct kind of form, you would then, I think very importantly for us is you would probably want to formulate some form of legal, formularization. So you would then, you would need to register a company. You would then probably need to get some register for example, tax and various things.
Yes.
So that you are in a formal legal kind of structure that allows you to get into the marketplace and actually raise funding. And then I think the third very key pillar for me is the ability to get a framework together in terms of financial information. So you know, are you able to invoice? Do you have some form of an accounting package, or I guess some form of formal accounting recognition? So say, you know, these are the invoices I'm doing. This is the revenue I'm starting to tick over. This is the collections I'm starting to get from people I'm selling to, and build up a little bit of data in terms of your ability to create a cash flow stream. And then you kind of you're quite far down the road in terms of somebody understanding your concept, your legal entity, your ability to generate a bit of cash. And then I suppose, you know, the other nice to have for us over time that we've realized are critical for us is, you know, do you understand fully around what operational expenses you might have? You know, to the earlier point around CapEx, you know, how much money are you spending on CapEx? How much money are you spending on capital expenditure? How much money are you spending on operational expenditure? Mm-hmm. Distinguishing between, you know, how are you paying salaries and all these good things, rent and all. And so you can slowly but surely start creating quite a nice storyline as to how the business is operating and how it's starting to generate cash. And then it's so much easier for anybody in any of the, I guess, investment streams. So whether it be from venture capital all the way down to full-blown banking to start seeing, you know, a story which makes it a lot more easier to fund. So I think it's a lot easier said than done, right? Yeah. So from experience, you know that unfortunately that piece takes a little bit of bridging finance to even get you there in the first place. And I suppose we've spoken a little bit about grants, and so grants are fundamental in some form to try and get stimulate that initial stage of getting some momentum. And for me, you know, I'm sure most of people have read about some success stories, even from this 350 Rand grant that individuals are getting, where they've actually launched relatively lucrative businesses from a relatively small amount of capital, whether it be ice creams or pizzas or whatever it might be. And so it's very important that you try and find access to that. And there is quite a few places where you can get some of that grant funding to kind of get you into a little bit of a formal kind of, I guess, storyline. And I think once you're down that road, then I think it's easier for the likes of ourselves and Vumela to kind of say, gee, you know, that's a nice story. I mean, this Kuseni story is a wonderful story. Once you see it's so much easier and so much more investable. But to answer your point about other things that are so important to try and get your mind around for support, as an entrepreneur, you can understand, you now, you've got your concept, you've got funders, you're running the invoice, the accounting, you're trying to get your product out there, you're kind of doing all this all day long, and you're trying to run a little treasury to keep your cash flow going. You know, all these types of things, you really need somebody to kind of guide you, maybe a mentor or some of the, I guess, more softer issues that aren't just around, the numbers, that really try and guide you to say, you know, maybe don't do this. And we have lots of programs that help you to try and not make mistakes that other people have made once you got this momentum going. Mm. And I think we're all trying to try and help each other to solve for some of those problems that you don't rush off a bit on a tangent and then kind of have to come back with some money spent. So you know, all these things are a little bit of, I guess, guidance and I suppose I think overall maybe handholding's a bit of a I don't know. That kind of thinking, I suppose, is where you're really trying to guide people financially wise and I suppose experience wise as to some of the things you can get going. Because, you know, I think once you have one or two investments and you've got momentum, then I think you really are kind of set for success, right? Yeah. You can then tap into banking funding, which obviously comes much further down the line. You can get a small working capital line to enable you to create sales through debtors, buy some stock. Once you've got a banking line and there's critical data on your ability to repay a bank, then you really do have a more structured balance sheet. So you have a little bit of equity, a little bit of grant funding, a little bit of debt funding, and then you can really start utilizing, you know, all that funding mechanisms to try and propel you into a different stage. So. Yeah, I've answered your question a bit of a roundabout way, but you know, those are some of my thoughts as to how we've seen the more successful businesses kind of transition into from really like startups into businesses where we're raising capital becomes so much easier.
No, excellent, and really good insight. The one question I always have about the ecosystem, right, is so you've got your early stage accelerators that are funding innovative ideas and trying to grow these businesses to a point where they can attract capital. On the other end, you've almost got growth investors that are then accelerating these businesses, right? So do you think there's enough capital flowing into that gap in the middle? Or can more be done in that sector or in that space to sort of provide additional support between accelerator phase and attracting growth capital?
So absolutely, and I think we need to certainly as a society try and find ways to bridge that gap, because you can understand that if you are a professional investor and you are looking for ways of deploying your capital to get a return that you think is commensurate with the risk, you would say to yourself, look, you know, I can either put my money in the listed market or whatever, bonds, whatever it might be, but you know, if I start looking towards some of this venture capital, probably quite risky for me. We know that there's quite a large amount of these businesses that don't succeed, so I might be a bit cautious to deploy some money there. So the professional market might find it a bit tricky, and then in the kind of more regulated banking environment, you find, you know, you need quite a lot of track record, you need a balance sheet, you need equity, you need cash flows to prove affordability and all these kind of things. So they kind of aren't involved. So we really need, I guess, between ourselves and governmental programs that have been so successful in places, I guess, like Singapore and Pakistan and various other countries where they have had combined, I guess, programs where they have bridged this gap between finding ideas that you can fund and put capital in and hopefully get a relatively good success rate. But certainly, as we stand today, you really have to try and find, I suppose, innovative ways to find flows that you can create. For me, the trick is going to be data. So the more data any individual can kind of piece together for themselves, it's easier is for somebody to understand that data and to invest into that data. So So that might be, for example, if you are a supplier to a corporate and you have a really good track record and the ability to supply a good product on time, a good quality at a good price, then you know, once you've done that three times, you know, it would be incumbent on the banks to see if they couldn't fund that purchase order or whoever it might be, because you've got quite a nice little track record now. So once you've done that a few times, so that data and our ability to scale data has changed dramatically over the last sort of 10 years and transformed our ability to analyze credit. And I think the more we can get access to intelligent data, then it will become much more easier to kind of say, at what stage can we provide the capital and what stage can't we?
Okay. No, great. And I mean, still on the topic of sort of earlier stage investing and sort of the parameters around there, Morendeni, you were part of the FNB Social Entrepreneurship Program. Yes. Tell us a bit about that and how it assisted the business in growing and, I guess, finally attracting seed capital.
Yeah, that's very interesting because when I look at where we are, we're 4 years in. Mm-hmm. I would say that our business is basically has gone through three growth phases. So the first phase was when we were doing a proof of concept. The biggest chunk of that money came from Innovation Hub. So that was the first phase. We were trying to figure out what we were going to do. Second phase was sort of then getting that to be some sort of a product. I think it was quite very, very interesting what Mike said about being a supplier and being reliable. So one of our best tools was one of the first things I was passionate about was providing a quality product that is such high quality that we retain 100% of our clients. So I said to myself, if we have four clients, it's better to have four clients every year for the next 10 years than to have 10 clients and just try to and not retaining most of them. Sure. So then what happened was that in the second phase of our business, we were retaining clients. Then when I went into the FNB Social Entrepreneurship Program, I was in that phase. What was happening then was that we were getting some traction, we're getting some money, we're getting some clients were growing, and then I went into a deep depression in the beginning of 2020? Must have been 2020. Then spoke to the people that were running the program, and I said, I want to drop out of the program. I was suffering from a deep depression. Then what happened was that they started talking as people. And then we realized that because of the phase my business is in, the highs become very, very high, but also the lows become very, very low as well. So when I started then doing therapy, that's when I realized that actually there's better ways that I can manage myself. So in that program the whole time, what I was really doing was I was growing myself in that 8 years or so. I mean, 8 months or so. I was working on growing myself. Then towards the end of that program, they asked us to apply for grant funding. Then I applied for grant funding. And the whole idea of the grant funding was we understand what's working. Can we then accelerate what's working? So then we took some of that money. It was like 400,000 rands, if I'm not mistaken. So it was sizable for us, but not that much. But we took that money and we put it in places that we know works. And then we tried to accelerate that, which then brought us to the new phase. We bootstrapped this business for 3 straight years. Then immediately after we got that grant funding and we're accelerating what actually works, we started then to prove that we can actually produce. We can actually produce a good product, who can actually generate revenue. I mean, we grew 300%, if I'm not mistaken, or 100% every year from that point onwards. And the whole point was that when I was there, I was now working on myself. I was working on improving myself as a person. I've never had business training ever in my life. I've always worked in municipalities. In municipalities, we don't work in money, so we don't necessarily work have, you know, money outcomes. So I had to work on myself, which then has brought us to the new phase that we're in right now, which without that peace, without that support, without that time, I actually don't know where we would have been. Most likely, maybe I would have had to go find a job or something. So that program was basically the turning point for my business. It helps us to prove our revenue for a full straight year. We were consistently proving our revenue. And it also helped me as an individual as well to work on myself. And now we are, I suppose, no longer a startup. We are a startup, but I think now we're a better business. Yeah. We're more of a business at the moment, yeah.
No, great.
So it was
great.
A turning point in a big way. Yeah. But also something I need to mention was that it's very, very difficult to get access to one of the toughest challenges in getting access to funding is getting access to people, right? If I was in Limpopo, it's very, very difficult for me to get access to people. Programs like that help you to get access to people, people that can be thinking of you when something comes up. So I would say in that gap that you're talking about, in that sort of early stage gap, programs like that also helps organizations to move from, you know, sort of early to somewhere. And then if it's good enough, I suppose, then you'll get some money, which obviously money is important to help you fuel your growth. Yeah.
No, excellent. And I mean, you touched on something that's quite important just now. You said you use the capital received from the program to sort of invest into products that you knew were proven. So in essence, sort of finding product market fit.
Yeah.
I mean, how important do you think that is for early stage businesses and to attract outside capital?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something we're talking about on our group of entrepreneurs. One of the things that we learned early is that this Richard Branson model of personify your business, you know, be the brand, go out there, get media attention, and then you will grow a business. We actually, most of us actually realizing that actually that's probably not the best way to grow a business. Actually, the best way to grow a business is to build a good damn product. Is to go out there, build the best product you can build, and try and find some people that are willing to pay for that product and then double down on that.
Yes.
So a lot of people are actually realizing now that that model that we were sort of being taught earlier is actually not the best model. So I would say for people that are in my position, people from Limpopo, we don't have generational wealth that we can get from, is to, if we really want to build something, go build it. Let's build it. Let's build that product that you want to build and build a good product. Because then what happens is that when you're building a good product, people come as well. So people that want to build cool stuff also come.
Yeah.
And then people are prepared to put their time for free as well. I had a very early, someone worked at Red Bull, who was an employee at Red Bull, and they were in the process of leaving Red Bull. And they said, because I used to work a lot with Red Bull, and they said to me, can I come work for you? I'm like, I can't afford to pay you. They're like, no, it's fine.
Just yeah.
Pay me $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
I'll be fine for the next couple of months. And the reason for that is because they believed we're building a good product. And then when you take that product to the market, then the market reacts, right? So I would say the best way of doing this is rather start with the product and then the branding, then the personification of that with that product as a baseline of it. Because then people will buy the product if it's good enough. Once they're buying it, then it's easier to attract capital. Because then at least you can show it on paper that people are buying it. You know?
Yeah, and then it's very easy, I guess, at that point to demonstrate your traction and to show that everything is going through to the bottom line and that sort of thing.
Yeah, because look, the truth is, before you attract capital, it's very hard to attract capital. It's a chicken and egg situation. So once you attract capital, then floodgates open, right?
Yes.
We're living through this personally, from personal experience, where it took us months to close our actual capital round, funding round from Vumela. It took us maybe 8 months or so to close that round, and then 3-4 weeks, 7 weeks, we're getting this expression of interest from all these venture capitalists. I mean, most of them were just beating with a stick, stay away, it's okay, I'm just joking. We're fighting off with a stick. But the truth is that, so if the minute we started generating revenue, the minute we could attract some actual venture capital, because the truth is, venture capital comes with a lot of due diligence. Due diligence took us 6 months, if I'm not mistaken. So once that gets done, then it's easier for other people to join the train.
Correct.
Because now the train is moving. So then they're starting to get some sort of traction, starting to actually see that the product works, people are willing to buy this product, is more important more than anything else. Unfortunately, we live in a country where, in Johannesburg, in Limpopo, there's not a lot of uncles that you're going to be sitting at Res and be like, yo, uncle, I'm trying to start this amazing thing.
Yeah.
Can you just borrow me R2 million?
Yeah.
It's not easy. So then it's best to just start.
No, definitely a symptom of the landscape and I guess the socioeconomic standard of the country. Mike, a question for you, right? So, I mean, we were speaking earlier about sort of corporate innovation and sort of corporate value chains. What role do you think corporates have to play in investing in innovative technologies in their value chains or businesses that could potentially fit their value chains? And do you think from a mindset perspective that corporates are there yet?
Yeah, so I suppose in any, I guess, business offering, so whether you're a corporate or an SME, you have to continually evolve and position yourself in the marketplace to keep your customers happy and have a client experience that people want to kind of stay and use your services or your products. And I suppose at any stage, as technology continues to evolve, companies would be hesitant if they didn't take those opportunities to continually evolve. I'm afraid they just won't last. So I think all these new technologies that are coming through in the different kind of offerings or the full chain value chain that they have should come to bear, you know, in some form. So if you don't have some innovation lab or something going for you that is continually identifying opportunities in the marketplace to evolve your product, then I think you won't probably survive into the longer term. And I think this is true, for example, if we just have to take a case study and if we think about Tesla. So Tesla is a business, in my mind, that is purely around the ability to mobilize people in a car without a driver, based on data that is basically utilizing probably the internet to drive the car without a driver. And it's not really about an electric vehicle. The reason why electric vehicles work is because they have the ability to have less moving parts and functionally wise and cost wise, they probably in a realm where in the future they will probably be best suited for that type of self-driving environment. If you are a big motor manufacturer now, and I won't name any brands, but if you are a big motor manufacturer now and you have a combustion engine running your car, and you think that the simple ability to swap from that to an electric vehicle will change the fact that you are now catching up to Tesla, I'm afraid I don't think you fully understood that it's not a swap but between the motor being being combustion and electric. It's a fundamental difference between, you know, if I'm going to buy a car in 10 years' time that is driven purely by data and the internet, I'd probably choose somebody that has great skills in that if I'm relying on the safety of that motor vehicle and not somebody that has the ability to manufacture a car, if you know what I understand. Yeah, yeah. And I think Tesla's positioned themselves as a data and a technology company and not a motor vehicle company. And I think, do you see the subtle difference that if the big motor manufacturers probably don't understand that if you don't move very quickly into a technology business, you will find that the motor vehicle business will be taken over by Apple and various other, I guess, data companies that have a much better suited infrastructure to provide that type of support, an iCar or whatever it might be. So and I think, you know, banks are the same and various other, I guess, industries are the same, where technology is moving at such a rate that if you don't keep up with the pace and find ways to change your innovation, then I think you'll be left slightly behind. But I suppose at the same time, and maybe just touching a bit on Kaseni Water and how I feel that impact has an influence to bear in certain big corporates' ability to transition forward, is that I think we all need to understand that, you know, as we try and, I guess, keep this planet going for the longer term, you know, it's incumbent upon big corporates to be good social citizens and to find their way into clean water and into a renewable energy and various things, not only because, you know, in certain countries, the actual the ability to get a connectivity, for example, to electricity can be constrained, and so you need that anyway, but I think it's the right thing to do, and I suppose that also creates opportunities for entrepreneurs to fill that gap with ideas and innovation and product that can fill that gap quite nicely, that that creates impact. And I must just say that I do believe that the ability to create and get access to funding, if you have a bit more of a impact bias, is probably also a little bit easier, mainly because, you know, the end game and the hurdle returns from any investor are slightly less, because there's so much more at play than just the return on the capital you're providing in there. So yes, I think to answer your question, I think there's there's a lot companies can do in order to do that, and I think impact, I guess, consciousness is a huge part of playing that.
No, excellent. And I guess a further question from that is what are some of the major themes you see over the next, I don't know, 5 years going forward? What sectors are you liking? What do you think, as an investor, you're interested in backing?
Well, I suppose I think it depends where you are positioned globally. So maybe in our context, in a Southern African context, I would have thought that for us, where I think the there will be a huge amount of capital to really be put to work is in probably like healthcare, education, renewable energy, and impact investing in all those spheres, places where we find that it can have a huge amount of social impact as well as financial impact. So those, I guess, and have been themes for quite a bit of time. So I think that's quite important. And I do see, you know, there's the ability to access capital through other means apart from, I guess, the traditional ways is also gaining momentum. There are a huge amount of fintechs out there, you know that. So it's good to keep an eye on to how those are performing, because, you know, they are niche kind of, I guess, offerings that are providing quite a nice client experience in various places. So hopefully the banks can continue to stay abreast of that technology and to keep up to speed. But I think, you know, and I think data for me is going to be a huge I guess sector to keep your eyes on. I think in any sphere the ability to I guess interpret and analyze and get functional around how the management of data is probably the future of any economy, and I think we need to really understand how best we can trap that and utilize that.
Morendeni, just a last question for you. I mean, you've been in the entrepreneurship journey for some time.
Yeah.
What advice would you give early stage founders and early stage teams in terms of growing their business initially and sort of growing it sustainably over the long term?
Ooh, okay. So I'm going to answer this question in a in a series of steps. So the first step would be... So there is funding out there, right? So the truth is there is funding out there. Funding is there. At the moment, I mean, everyone is talking about it, that Africa this year, 2020, has been flush with cash. Mm. 2021, it's just growing every year. The biggest question is, how do people get access to that funding? If you are in Stellenbosch, right? If you are, so this thing about pattern matching.
Yes.
If you are in Stellenbosch and you are a white male, you are more likely to get access to people that will open up that space. So the question now is, then the second step of this question is, if there is funding, and if the funding is available to small businesses that are doing great, what are we doing then to put ourselves in that position to be considered and to successfully close those funding rounds? So the first step is focusing on product, coming back to my initial point. Second step is, one of the things that's really, really underrated is what something that I was talking yesterday with someone is subject matter experts. So one interesting thing is that if you look at how Tesla and SpaceX and all these companies are ran, they're run by people that are like brilliant at that particular field. Elon Musk is the face of the company, but the people that are running those companies are brilliant at what they do. So it's easier to then do stuff that's innovative because you know the fundamentals of that thing.
Definitely.
So if we are thinking of then doing something and raising funding, we shouldn't be going for industries because they are the hot ones at the time, like fintech at the moment.
Correct.
We should actually be thinking about what are some of the things that I'm a subject matter expert in that I can actually do that will be impactful. I happen to be in the water space. I've been in the water space for the past 12 years. It's something that I know really well, something that I've studied well. So then the first part of that component is knowing what I'm really good at, knowing what I want to build, and something that I'm either good at or I can actually get people that are very, very good at to run with me. Then the third component to that is putting ourselves out there. Oftentimes, we entrepreneurs, we can sit back and blame the world and sort of, you know, feel like victims because odds are stacked against us. But if we really truly believe in what we're doing, we'll put ourselves out there. We will be vulnerable to failure and be vulnerable to getting a no. So get ourselves out there. What is important is that if I'm building something that is important, something that's big, something that can actually work, something that's functional and I'm good at this, I will attract those resources. It might not take 2 years, might take 3 years, might take 4 years. Like what happened to us. We didn't raise our money overnight. We stuck to the basics. We stuck to what we were doing. So let's become very good at what you're doing. My previous mentor, when I was still working, my first ever boss, he said to me, you know, I asked him why he's so confident. Because he's so I'm very shy,
yeah.
By the way. I'm very shy. When I talk, people don't believe that I'm very shy.
Yeah.
And he said to me, the reason why I'm this confident is because I believe I'm one of the best, I'm one of the biggest experts in this field.
Yes.
It was in wastewater bioreactors. He's like, I'm the expert. The reason why I'm the expert is because I spend time studying this thing. So therefore, when I'm in a room, I can stand on my own feet. So the point being that let's become the expert, the subject matter expert, and then we just put ourselves out there. Put yourself out there and ensure that we are the most confident people and we can apply for any funding. Early stage, it's great to apply for some grant funding because obviously at that stage you want to prove yourself a little bit. And then we continue to prove ourselves over time. I would say it's not necessarily great to start with venture funding initially because then obviously there's all this compliance and all these things that you need to do upfront. I'd say even if it's get some grant funding upfront, it's always great because then you prove the concept. But the most important thing is become the subject matter expert. Become the one person that knows that field better than anybody else because you've spent time in that field. And again, no one wants to get on a stationary train. People want to get on a moving train. So if you start moving that train and you get on people on board, then FNB will come with a grant funding upfront. FNB will come and say, well, let's try Vumela this time. And then you start to move. And then once you've, unfortunately, chicken and egg, once you start raising the money, then more money starts coming.
Yes, yes.
Unfortunately, but it's a slow moving process. But once this train catches speed, it moves.
No, definitely, definitely. I think that's really great advice for up and coming entrepreneurs. Mike, a final word from you. I mean, what should entrepreneurs be doing in order to attract, I guess, commercial capital or corporate capital?
Yeah. So I think we touched a bit on a bit earlier on, but I think the reality for me is you need to really get a concise storyline as to your offering, how you set up to attract capital, your legal framework, your ability to generate revenue, recurring revenue over time. Obviously, the management team is so important. You know, the ability for their management team to do what they say is in their business plan, and I think all these things kind of come together that, you know, if you have that story really, really concisely put together, then I think, you know, you've got a good chance of attracting forms of capital that you need. But for me, the you have to be, I guess, you know, entrepreneurs are always are very passionate about what they're doing. They have an idea of where their product can fit in. They, you know, that has to be a bit of a seamless story, you know. And I think. And I think, you know, to Cassini's, you know, to their ability to have this amazing product, to tell a good story that has impact, that you can kind of see on the ground at working, you know, all these things count in your favor. And I really do impress upon individuals that are going down this road that you know, they're offering their market, their price points, all these things, their ability to generate revenue are all very, very important. But put it into a story and have a really good story that investors listen to, can empathize with, and then can see themselves deploying capital, and hopefully between the two of you creating a partnership that is incredibly successful and goes on to be a great success with or without the initial funders.
Lovely, and I think the right word is partnership. Yeah. It's a journey that you take from, I guess, early stage business, and you grow with the business, and hopefully can continually support in their growth journey. Thank you very much, guys, for joining me today. Really appreciate the time, and it was really great chatting about SMEs and SME funding and sort of the opportunities and challenges in the space. And hopefully we continue to drive the narrative forward and continually sort of make an impact in early stage businesses.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks. Certainly a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Cutting Edge podcast. We've had a really interesting conversation today, and thank you very much to my guests for joining me today.
Follow our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, where we will be releasing a new episode every 2 weeks. Or subscribe to the Edge Growth YouTube channel to catch the conversation.